Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lyricord Early and Classical Music Show. I'm here with my co-host Jeffrey Dooley. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hi, Nick. It's great to be here continuing this.
Good to have you. And today we are going to continue our discussion about keyboard instruments.
So, Nick, what do you think we'll be listening to next?
This is actually a recording that came out on Lyricord quite some time ago and has been revived, of C.P.E. Bach, his six essay sonatas. Let's listen to Elisabeth Katzenellenbogen performing Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach's essay sonatas, and it was made in the late 50s.
That in itself is amazing. Good for Lyricord.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, my father talking about this Katzenellenbogen. I thought that was such an unusual name.
It is.
And, of course, forte piano recordings were not that common in those days.
Not at all. And if they were, it was all regarded as sort of quaint.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I think, really reveals C.P.E. Bach's approach. And he had one foot still in the Baroque because his father was a tremendous influence on him. He really became a great keyboard player like his father. But he uses both those techniques of the Baroque and the new Gallant style. So he's right in the middle of it.
Well, let's listen to another of these essay sonatas by Carl Philipp and Emanuel Bach, and then we'll talk some more. Allegro di Molotto, Sonata Number 5.
Well, I think it would be worth for all your listeners to actually hear C.P.E. Bach's own words on ornamentation. There's a real reason for it, and he encapsulizes it, and this is his own writing. No one disputes the need for embellishments. They are, in fact, indispensable. Consider their many uses. They connect and enliven tones and impart stress and accent. They make music pleasing and awaken our close attention. Expression is heightened by them. Let a piece be sad, joyful, or otherwise, and they will lend fitting assistance. They improve mediocre compositions. Without them, the best melody is empty and ineffective, the clearest content clouded. He cites the last movement of Sonata Number 5, which we heard. And then he goes on to say, he warns against varying everything. This is Charles Burney's quotation. For if it is, the reprise will become a new piece. So he warns against over-ornamenting the reprise, which means to do something again, or it'll become a new piece. So it should be decorated. So performers were composers. at the time. Very rarely would you have a performer who couldn't compose music. So the improvisation was part of the composition at the moment. It was called co-composing, is a good term for it. And much of this music is written down, but probably some of it was improvised. Certainly the way C.P.E. Bach writes his ornamentation, it sounds improvised to the listener. And he describes that it should sound improvised. Even the tempo marks are not set in stone. They have more to do with character. For example, he says here that tempo and meter must be frequently changed in order to rouse and still the rapidly alternating effects, slowing down and speeding up. So ornamentation is so much a part of the music. It's expected. And performers of the day wouldn't consider performing a piece without ornamentation. They were criticized for it. And the instrument itself is just right for this because the response is so quick that you can trill quickly, you can do short notes.
And in that sense, it's somewhat tied to the clavichord.
Yes, it is. It is. It has that touch and release. The main difference, of course, is the clavichord. When you press the key, the tangent holds it against the string. But this is still a Hammerklavier, but it's so light in the way it attacks that it gives it can give the impression of tremendous loudness.
It's amazing grandeur. That it's a pretty small instrument.
Yes.
Really, and it doesn't sound it.
And the bass lines come out in such a way in these instruments. It sounds bowed.
Right.
Because they seem to increase in sound and then decay. That was a revelation to me when I first performed with a forte piano. It was like an orchestra. It was like an orchestral clanging of tangents and the bowing of the bass line.
Right.
In this music, it's the contrast. That's what makes it great. You have a different sound on various notes, and you bring out the real contrast, the real true forte piano, loud and soft.
Let's listen to another forte piano performed on by John van Buskirk on an album on Lyricord called The Art of the Forte Piano, in which he plays works by Beethoven, Mozart, and Clementi. And let's listen to a little bit of Clementi, and then we'll talk some more.
Okay.
Thank you. The third movement of Muzio Clementi's Sonata in F Minor, the Presto movement, and brilliantly played by John van Buskirk.
A perfect example of how the music comes to life on the instruments for which it was composed.
Uh-huh.
The variety of sound and the touch. And when a bass note is played on these instruments, it's always a big event.
Yeah.
It means something.
Uh-huh.
It's not all the same color. You really hear the difference in the sounds, different ranges of the keyboard. Like the top notes, you probably notice, are like sparkling.
Uh-huh.
And the bass notes sound bowed. It's like a little chamber
orchestra. Yeah.
And the lightness, the ease of playing the instrument allows you to do these quick ornaments without labor. A modern pianist has to learn how to, I suppose I could say this and get a lot of letters, force this music to work on the modern piano, because it's not intended for this kind of quick movement.
Right.
So the modern pianos that seem to be the most effective are the great big Brusendorfers, which have this rather crisp sound.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an example of how the music comes to life at the end of the fingertips, those wonderful bass notes that come out.
All right. Well, to get those letters in the mail, folks, this instrument is a Anton Walter replica built by Philip Belt in 1983. I presume it's a larger instrument than the earlier one we heard.
Yes, it's probably not a square. It's probably regular.
But, you know, it almost doesn't matter. Size doesn't matter.
The timbre changes.
Mm-hmm.
The square one is a little bit more, let's say, slightly more obvious.
Mm-hmm.
This one is a little more, maybe a little farther along,
right,
as it were.
Yeah, and certainly you can hear the relationship between the modern piano and the forte piano.
Oh, definitely.
In this instrument.
Definitely.
Because
I think we talked about Glenn Gould and what Glenn Gould never had a chance, apparently, to play the forte piano, but he did everything he could with the modern piano.
Right.
When he played Bach to create a sound like that.
Get those letters in the mail, folks.
The other thing, one thing to remember, probably the biggest difference of the modern piano and the forte piano is the hammers in the forte piano are leather.
Right.
Rather than felt. The felt was added gradually as it moved into the late 19th century, mid-19th century. But Schubert's instrument had leather hammers.
Uh-huh.
So that makes a big difference when you have a rather slightly hard surface striking a string. The music, it immediately converts it to a bright, crisp sound.
Right. Well, let's take a break and then we can come back and play some more, okay?
Very good.
The first four volumes of J.S. Bach's Keyboard Works performed on clavichord by Richard Traeger are available on the Lyricord Early Music series. Peter Graham Wolf of Musical Pointers exclaims, "This is a revelatory ongoing series which establishes the suitability of that quiet instrument for playing and listening to Bach's solo keyboard music." Bridget Cunningham of Harpsichord and Fortepiano calls these recordings fantastic and a must for lovers of the clavichord and J.S. Bach. Robert Haskins, American Record Guide, says of Volume 2, "Traeger's recording of Bach's toccatas is special, extremely moving, and completely indispensable." Volume 3 ranked the highest-rated recording of Bach's inventions by BBC's Andrew McGregor. And the 2009 Penguin Guide to Classical Music says of Volume 4, "Brilliant performances, all of which sound very different from harpsichord or piano performances, and engagingly so." Jeffrey Lipscomb of Fanfare, "Pathbreaking Clavichord, warmly recommended." Jan Hanford of the J.S. Bach homepage calls Volume 4 a unique and sublime performance of the Art of Fugue. Richard Traeger is a world-class musician. I believe all of his recordings belong in every Bach lover's collection. And Francis Knights of Clavichord International agrees. This series is proving an essential purchase for J.S. Bach devotees. Experience all of Richard Traeger's Bach on clavichord recordings on CD or download at www.lyricord.com today.
Jeffrey Dooley, you've had a long, extensive career as a countertenor. I understand you give master classes, too.
Yes, I do, and probably my favorite way of teaching is working with singers in Baroque interpretation and also how to improvise cadenzas. And I also teach English pronunciation for foreign students and business people, both in classroom settings and for private students as well. And I also lecture and serve on panels, that kind of thing.
Well, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, they can reach me through my manager, Melody Bunting International is the name of the organization, 155 West 72nd Street, room 604, New York, New York, 10023. And the website is www.melodybunting.com.
And the phone number?
212-799-4949.
Do you have an email address?
JeffreyMDooley@gmail.com.
I'm back here talking with Jeffrey Dooley on the Lyricord Early and Classical Music Podcast. So that is The Art of the Fortepiano, Muzio Clementi, performed by John Van Buskirk. John Van Buskirk recently moved to New Zealand. I tracked him down the other day by email. And he is someone who's performed all over this country and taught at many different universities. He's gone to New Zealand now. So.
I see. What are we going to hear next? Do we have any more of his?
We could play a little more, sure. Why don't we play a little Johann Christian Bach?
Very good. The English Bach.
Right.
Probably the most gallant. He was really completely in the gallant style, where C.T.E. Bach still, as I mentioned before, there's still evidence of the Baroque. But Christian Bach was ahead of everybody. He was a modern composer.
So let's listen to Johann Christian Bach's Sonata in C minor, the Prestissimo movement.
Thank you.
Johann Christian Bach, Sonata in C minor, Prestissimo, Opus 17, number 2. A very spirited performance by John Van Buskirk on his forte piano from 1983. Actually, the recording was probably made about 1999. Any thoughts?
Yes, as we were listening, I was thinking, this is definitely not harpsichord music.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the fast movement in the left hand is different than Scarlatti, which also has fast movements. But the quick and light fioritura in the left hand, this is definitely forte piano music.
Yeah.
And the contrasts are loud and soft.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of prickly sound of the treble and the really strong bowed bass. And Christian is completely in the new style.
Mm-hmm.
He's called the London Bach because he developed his career in London.
Right.
But this one really shows you the freedom and ease of doing virtuoso passage work. So it doesn't sound like virtuoso passage work. It's just convincing.
So now let's move on a little bit. As they say in Monty Python, now for something completely different.
This is definitely something completely different.
In our quest for all keyboards that we can possibly get on Lyricord, we started a series of recordings last year, the first of which came out last October, I believe, A Piano Christmas in the 1920s. And what this is a recording of the Ampico reproducing piano, which is a technology that was invented in the late 19th century, had its heyday in the 1920s. And what it is a player piano that can reproduce the exact performance of the person who plays it. And how it accomplishes this on paper rolls is a whole other story. But it really does it, and it really works. And a lot of great composers and pianists cut reproducing rolls for Ampico and some of the other companies. And a good friend of ours, of my wife Leslie and mine, is Tom Ventarella. His great hobby is the Ampico reproducing piano, and he owns one, and he owns about 500 rolls. So we've recorded enough for about 5 albums, and the first one was A Piano Christmas in the 1920s. Upcoming ones will be Dinner and Dance Music in the 1920s, Chopin in the 1920s, Debussy in the 1920s, and A Taste for Spain in the 1920s. Those are all forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fascinating instrument, and one of the things about it is, aside from the fact that it's a kind of a miracle that it can reproduce the actual performance of the pianist, is that it really captures the time of different performing styles on the piano.
Particularly the use of arpeggiation,
mm-hmm.
which you hear so much.
And you don't really hear it all anymore.
No, it's discouraged by many piano teachers. But we could say this is a period style, too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I thought what we'd do is play one of the rolls by Andre Kamita called Christmas Carols No. 1. These were rolls of medleys put out every year at holiday time of everybody's favorite Christmas music. So what I wanted to play now is Christmas Carols No. 1, performed by Andre Kamita. We don't have a year on that one. Many of them say what year they're from, 1926, 7, 8, 9. They're all from the 1920s. And this is a medley of Christmas music, and we'll talk about it afterwards.
Thank you.
That was Andre Kamida performing Christmas Carols No. 1. And we were just talking about the distinct arpeggiation and rolling in the performance of the notes, a style which is now sort of looked at as kind of corny and Liberace-like.
Yes.
Probably because of overuse, but also possibly because of the instruments themselves.
Yeah, the instrument itself, because this is early 20th century piano, so it still has the crispness of the hammers, and so it responds to the arpeggio more than, let's say, a modern instrument, which is a more, not muffled, but rounded sound. Mm-hmm. In other words, not much vowel sound. But this still has, this responds to the arpeggio very effectively.
Mm-hmm. And we were also talking about the harpsichord and the importance of arpeggiation in the shaping of a performance.
Yes.
And in a way, this is sort of a direct line to that from over the centuries.
That leads right through it. And then it was discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
But it shows you how times move along. So now, when you have, as it were, a modern pianist who is suddenly confronted with the harpsichord, because this arpeggiation is discouraged, then when they play the harpsichord, it's straight chords. And this is why the people think the harpsichord is a tinny little sounding instrument, because the modern pianist is trained not to use arpeggiation, except when marked by the composer.
Right.
But here, it's sort of, as you say, it's maybe an outgrowth of it, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to hear next?
Well, what I thought we'd listen to now is a piece that is perhaps not strictly speaking Christmas music, but is a piece for children called The Toy Soldiers March, written in 1917 by the Austrian violinist and composer Fritz Kreisler. And a lot of people don't know that Fritz Kreisler was actually a pianist as well. But he was apparently a very fine one, and he did do some roles for Ampico. Elaine Obenchain, who wrote a compendium about the Ampico pianos and roles and performances, wrote, Kreisler was also an extraordinarily fine pianist, few people knew it since he never played in public. Thus, his Ampico recordings provide the unique opportunity of hearing Kreisler, the pianist. So let's listen to The Toy Soldier's March by Fritz Kreisler.
Very good.
Well, I guess that about does it for our hammered and tonged, or whatever you want to call it.
Plucked and bowed. Not bowed, but sounds bowed. Like a tour of keyboard instruments.
Why don't we go out with a little more from Piano Christmas in the 1920s on the early 20th century Haynes Brothers Baby Grand Piano with the reproducing Ampico mechanism built in right under the keyboard. And let's hear the first Noel played by John T. Howard. John Tasker Howard was an author and musicologist and as well as a composer and pianist. So let's hear the first Noel, and thanks for being with us this time, and thank you, Jeffrey.
Oh, this was wonderful.
All right, very good.
I'd like to sing with this instrument, maybe a Bach.
Yeah, there are Bach reproducing roles.
Yes.
Really. I have a list of all the roles that he has, and it's really astounding. We got about three-quarters of the way through listing them and didn't finish because there were so many.
It's an amazing sound.
So see you next time.
Thank you.
This program copyright 2009 Lyricord Discs. All rights reserved.